Our last presenter is Mario Ybarra Jr., who lives and works in here in LA. His work documents the transformation of Los Angeles as a center of distinctly urban hybrid culture. Together with Juan Capistán and Carla Diaz, he co-founded Slanguage in 2002 as both studio and exhibition space. Ybarra has participated in exhibitions such as Footnotes on Geopolitics, Market and Amnesia at the Second Moscow Biennale of Contemporary Art, Alienation at Institute of Contemporary Arts London in the UK, Home of the Free at the Hyde Park Art Center in Chicago, Uncertain States of America at the Museum of Modern Art in Oslo, Norway, Consider This here at LACMA last year, and the Orange County, the 2006 California Biennial, and the Orange County Museum at the Orange County Museum of Art, and he'll be in the 2008 Whitney Biennial. Please help me in welcoming Mario Ybarra to this.
In the simplest form, the way I like to talk about my work as of late has been that I've been thinking about two different things, which would be a kind of type of portraiture and a kind of landscape. Both of these things are kind of classic themes that artists have been dealing with forever, and there's something that I guess I kind of deal with as well. What you're looking at here is a series of photographs called Go Tell It. Go Tell It comes from the spiritual Go Tell It on the Mountain, the title comes from that. But I was also kind of interested in this idea of the kind of gesture or kind of cultural inheritance of the gesture of the kind of raised fist and kind of protester. I was also kind of interested in this idea of kind of sites of kind of social kind of ruins. What you're looking at here is my mom's house, my childhood home. So I guess it's a kind of my own ruin. But it's also the space where I kind of started this gesture, started kind of making these photographs with this gesture. And they're also kind of sited in these places where kind of nobody would hear me kind of early on a Sunday morning or kind of early on a Saturday morning, where there wouldn't be a big crowd. Kind of the only people that were passing by were the people walking their dogs or little kids on their bicycles. So this is a site of my mom's house. This is a site, another site that was kind of a real ruin that I kind of visited as a child. And it's at the end of the 110 freeway. It's kind of interesting. I grew up in the port of Los Angeles in a place called Bloomington, California. And it's the third largest port in the world. I think something like 60% of the goods that we get here in the United States come through my neighborhood. So it's one of these places where when people say things fell off a truck, they really mean it. 4th of July starts like in May. it's also one of these sites that have been kind of super volatile in terms of the history of kind of the notion of Chicano, but also the notion of Mexican American. And the kind of notion was kind of really kind of a prototypical space for kind of this kind of ongoing sites of war that are kind of incited by the LAPD and kind of street gangs here in Los Angeles. Over the past, I've been away for a few months, and I've been reading the LA Times and looking at the calendar section, and all the way from like Cypress Park, which is on one end of the 110 freeway, all the way to Wilmington. You know, we're having a lot of kind of police killings of people. I just wanted to speak to that because it's starting to be something that's a real concern. Three people in my neighborhood were murdered by police in the past 3 weeks, so something that's a real concern. But at the end of the 110 freeway, where this kind of port is, there's this place that I grew up going to called Sunken City. And Sunken City was a real kind of active neighborhood up until the 1930s when it started to slide off into the Pacific Ocean. And what you're looking at me standing on is what used to be the semblance of what used to be a blacktop street, an asphalt street. So on that is like all these curbs and kind of sidewalks and chimneys. But as a kid, I would go there with my dog and kind of run around and look at things and kind of pretend I was Indiana Jones, meets G.I. Joe, meets whoever I was at that time. But we're taking this photograph, which is kind of what I thought was kind of the end of Western civilization. So we see this kind of schooner and this oil tanker and Catalina Island there in the background. So there's these kind of layers to me in relationship to these kind of histories. One of this this site of kind of actual ruin in relationship to Los Angeles and the actual site there, but then also this kind of ruin of kind of like that gesture in relationship to these kind of multiple histories that are kind of layered in this photograph or this image. So that was like the Go Talent series. So I kind of saw that as both two things, one a kind of a position of kind of self-portraiture in a landscape. Stephen just spoke to Carla, Juan, and I's kind of experience starting this space language. And for a few years, Juan Capuchon and I were very kind of tight in terms of collaborating on all these different intervention projects around South Central and different parts of Los Angeles. And ultimately, that kind of came to a head and has opened in this space and kind of becoming involved in like a kind of social kind of intervention in relationship to not just putting things on the street and hoping they disappear or not disappear and taking a photograph of them or not taking a photograph of them and hoping they would be in their book and someday somebody would talk about them, but really kind of coming to head with the idea of really trying to interject a kind of social space and a kind of space for kind of education within the community that was really in need of that. And so what we decided to do, and I'm going to kind of speak to this image is kind of after that, but what we decided to do was develop a independently, not with any kind of funding source from the county or anything like that, was to develop a kind of workshop for young artists that were 18 to 25 years old for about 2 years to come into our space and to work in it. And when people would come, you know, I kind of stopped at the Go Talent because that's where people were picking up on the work that I was doing that was kind of object-based. And they'd come into the studio for 2 years into Slanguage, and they would ask me, like, well, they'd look around the walls and they'd see projects kids were working on, or they'd see projects some of our artists and residents were working on, and they'd ask me, well, Mario, what are you working on? And I would look at them and say, you're breathing in it. You're breathing in what I'm working on. This space that we're here every day, that I'm coming and opening the door for, sweeping, mopping, cleaning the windows, picking up the trash, making sure crackheads don't break in, I'm working on this space, providing and facilitating a space for these young artists to work on. So there is a big kind of record of that, and there are images and all that kind of stuff. But I guess Bill earlier was asking about like this kind of missing kind of chunk of like a collective or collaborative history in relationship to our practice, or specifically my practice, is that people weren't really interested in that idea. People were, but they weren't like, well, we can't exhibit that. It wasn't something that could be like, you know, exhibited. So I said, all right then, well, I'll do things that you could exhibit. And I ended up making this giant Frankenstein work. This work was here in this exhibition called Consider This. It was a kind of monument to a place called the Belmont Yard. And if you guys are familiar with kind of Los Angeles or like Los Angeles street history, there was this place that was just kind of east of downtown LA called, the west of downtown LA called the Belmont Yard. And it was the Belmont Graffiti Yard. And that was in junior high school, this place that you would kind of hear about in the bathroom, that there was this place that you could go to and you could spray paint and nobody would tell you anything. So of course, the first time somebody got a car, we all jump in it, drive down and go spray paint, and it was awesome. It was awesome to be able to find this space, like a kind of third space or kind of unobserved space where we could kind of make kind of art and make kind of marks. And I was interested in this idea of it, well, I'll talk about it now, but I was interested in these kind of histories that are kind of overlaid on us as, you know, as kind of people or whatever we are, in relationship to two different things. One is that there's this official story. There's the official story, kind of how Ken was talking about in relationship to the research on his lynchings, that when you find in the sixth grade book that there's an official story. But then there's also this thing that is the orificial story, or the thing that is kind of spewed from the orifice. And when I first saw the asshole mural, I was like, that embodies like this orifice, the orificial. And at the Belmont, they had this big giant hole. So I was thinking, there's this space of the orifice where like the city spews its stuff. And I really wanted to kind of commemorate this space because it had a few different histories. One was that it was a history of Los Angeles' first subway line that ran from 1924 to 1955. But then also it had this other history of the graffiti yard, which happened from about 1983 until about, you know, when they finally tore down this place a few years ago, was where everybody, in terms of like the last few generations of graffiti artists, had painted. And then on top of that, it was the only site in the United States where men from Michoacan they came and cleared the field, and they played a derivative version of the pre-Columbian ball court games called Danaska. So it was the only site in the United States where this ball game was being played, one of the real kind of, the only site where an actual kind of subway existed in the early part of the 20th century here in Los Angeles, and where this kind of graffiti history played out. So I tried to go back and find these different communities that had worked on this. I found the original graffiti artist that painted in the Belmont Yard and invited them to come and paint the facade of our building. I also kind of, in each one of these little cases here, were different kind of artifacts from the different kind of histories there. And then on top of that, I got to work with the permanent collection here at LACMA and use a 2,000-year-old model of the ball court game being played. So this is the, you know, this was the Belmont ruins. This was something that here at home, a lot of people got to see me kind of working on. And I always kind of talked to about it in terms of the notion of we. Muhammad Ali, you know, now that he's older, you know, he's famous for being, you know, super articulate and, you know, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee, and all this kind of stuff, and super savvy. But in his, you know, in his kind of elder age, addressed a graduating class at Harvard, and he gave what was kind of now said to be one of the shortest poems in history. And what he said when he came to address the class, you know, in the state that he's in with his, you know, condition, he came up to the podium and he said two words. He said, "Me, we." And that was super profound to like what I was thinking about in relationship to the production that I've been engaged in over the past few years. So like on the last kind of lecture series that I've been giving, I've been saying we did this and we did that and we did all this stuff, and people look at me like, and you know, I get credited, you know, as being the artist for this kind of project, but people are always asking me like, who's this we you're talking about? And it's always like, well, man, I couldn't do this whole thing by myself, right? There's always like all these different people that are involved in kind of the process for me to make work. And I've been, when I find myself in isolated positions, like, you know, I don't like to make work, I get kind of bored. This was kind of like the follow-up photograph to the Go Talent piece, and this happened in 2005. It was just before all the kids did their walkout marches a few years ago, and were kind of blowing out of schools and like walking on the freeways. And this is the 110 freeway, right where kids, like the fall, a few months later, started marching on the freeway. So this piece here is called "Throw Your Hands Up, Surrender," and. No, let's just throw your hands up, surrender. I felt that way at that time. Still do sometimes. This is a great opportunity that I had to do at the Miami Art Basel Fair in 2006. They do this thing where they bring all these containers, shipping containers. And mind you, I grew up in the Port of LA, so like shipping containers are like everywhere. They're like huge kind of obstacles in like the sight line where I grew up at. And you know, my mom is a longshoreman, my uncles are longshoremen, everybody in my family, the longshoremen march on Labor Day in front of my studio. It's like the port is like omnipresent in my life. And I said, wow, great, I'm gonna be an artist to like get away from these containers. And they give me this opportunity to go to Miami Beach to do this project. And I walk onto the beach and they're like, yeah, Mario, we want you to do art in a container. And I'm like, no, don't do it to me. Like, that was terrible. You know, it's kind of like that Twilight Zone episode where the guy wants to read books and he locks himself in the library. And then, like, you know, and then his glasses break at the end and he can't read his books. Damn! I tried to make it happen. So what I decided to do, I was like, people are walking on the fair and this frenzy, buying all this stuff, and hopefully, like, you know, hopefully buying stuff or whatever. And so I decided that what I wanted to do was do this kind of other kind of portraiture within these containers. So I did this piece called Tea Time for Tito. And what it is was a tea room dedicated to Tito Puente. And you could come into it and there are all these sofas and mirrors and a bar. And we served you chocolatibara and tea. So you got to like, for, and then I also try to subvert the idea of like buying work or collecting, and that we had these edition of teacups made. You can kind of see them there with Tito's image on there, my signature. And people could pay what they could for the cup. You know, like you didn't have to like pay a set price for what it was. So like I've been meeting all these different people as I've been traveling around the world. They're like, oh, Mario, you're in our collection. I'm like, yeah. They're like, yeah, we bought one of your teacups. I never asked them for how much.
it's a good way to get into collections for.
I haven't got to put any on UCB yet.
So that's the tea time Latino piece. This is a project that I worked on with my wife. My wife, Carla Diaz. Carla, raise your hand. Yeah. She's shy. There she is. Carla and I have been very actively involved when we were working on Slanguage and producing and developing an education program there. And it was super kind of important to us because we had grown up at a community center in Long Beach called Homeland Cultural Center, and we were kind of mentored by a man named Manasad Gamboa, who was an amazing writer, poet, and playwright, and an amazing teacher. And he had taught many generations of kind of artists here in Los Angeles, and Carla and I had the good fortune of being able to work with him. So this idea of kind of artist as educator, artist as a space facilitator, and artist as artist was super always ingrained in us since we were kids. There was never a delineating point where we had to choose one or the other. They were always intertwined. And so this is a project that Carla and I worked on at the Serpentine Gallery in London, and it's called The Peacock Doesn't See Its Own Ass. Let's Twitch Again, Operation Birdwatching in London. But Carla and I kind of played Sidney Poitier in To Sir With Love. And we went out to London and we worked with these five young artists there to develop a bird watching club there in central London. I went out to central London. Before I went out to do a site visit, Carla and I would always go walking our dogs in this little park by our house, and we noticed that there are always these people with like shorts on and a big kind of safari hat with binoculars and a book, like looking for birds. And that me being super nosy, I would always ask them, like, what are you looking for? And they'd be like, oh, a thick-lip kingbird or a yellow-bellied sapsucker. And I'd be like, what's that? Is he from the east side or the west side? I'm like, on the right side of town. So we're like, oh, wow. And in that same neighborhood, there are all these peacocks in that same neighborhood that the park was in. And there are these feral peacocks over there. So Carla and I were like, oh, it'd be tight to make a bird watching club at home and blah, blah, blah. You know, I get going and my wheels start turning. And my grandmother had always told me when I was a kid, whenever we got proud or me and my cousins got proud or thought we were too cool, she would always tell us that the peacock doesn't see its own ass. So imagine, the peacock is this big, giant peacock with all the feathers and all that, right? And then it turns around, and it has brown back there with like little paper and stuff. So when I got to the Serpentine, I walked into the first gallery, and I'm like, I'm like, all right, I'm showing in London, blah, blah, blah. Is this my space? The first room? No, Mario. Come on, the next room. Is this my space? No, come on. They took me all the way out of the museum and back around to the back door. I'm like, wait a minute, we're already outside the museum. So they gave me the back entrance to the museum. So I was like, in a weird kind of Michael Lasher way, I was cultural critiquing or institutionally critiquing this institution by saying the peacock doesn't see its own ass. Which ended up working for us because we got to work with these fine young artists. Each of them were like super cool, and we got to develop this installation with them, and we got to start a bird club in London. So Carla and I are members 1 and 2 of this bird club in central London. We have 289 members. We have anywhere from 80 little kids to Yoko Ono in our bird club. So it's kind of cool. And this project was also given a number one pick by the curator that I worked with at the Tate Modern for her top 10 list of 2006. So working with these kids and being in the back of the museum ain't that bad. Carla and I worked a lot together, and Juan and I worked a lot together. There are about 10 different artists within this exhibition, Phantom Sightings, that I have a really close relationship with, and I kind of think about as I'm going through work that I'm making. And Carla and I, we had the good fortune of inheriting this place called the New Chinatown Barbershop, which is a little barbershop that's in Chinatown, has been there for about 50 years, was run by a Mexican man and a Filipino man. They spoke Tagalog, English, Spanish, Cantonese, and Yiddish. We had inherited from a woman named Annie Shaw, who had been running projects there from 1999 to about 2005, and then Annie was going to go away to school at Columbia, New York. So she kind of held this competition to see who would take over the barbershop. And Carla and I, we put together this proposal with all the different projects we had been doing as Slanguage. and we were able to kind of win the lease to the barbershop. So for 2 years or so, we ran exhibitions there. We did all kinds of different things. We worked with individual artists. We worked with groups. We worked with all kinds of different people. But for most of all, it became like a kind of other lab for me as an artist. I was sitting in the barber chair all day. People would come in, ask me for a haircut. I'd say, no, I can't cut your hair. I could do it. There's no certificates on the wall or anything like that. And they would always come in, and since it was a Chinese town, they'd always ask us, well, you're not Chinese. And I'd tell them, well, we're Los Angeles. So what I decided to do, I was invited to do this project at the Tate Modern, this project that was for this exhibition called The World as a Stage, and they asked artists that kind of facilitate space for kind of activities to kind of play out in. So I decided, well, it would be great for us to kind of recreate the barbershop inside the Tate Modern and bring in barbers to cut hair within the exhibition. You don't see any barbers here, they're phantom. But what we ended up doing was I did just that. We had an international barber competition inside the Tate Modern, inside of this installation. So I brought a barber from London, a barber named Daniel from a shop called Cuts there, a barber from Milan, and then my little homie barber from down the street, who's 25 years old, and just opened up his shop there in Wilmington. First time on the airplane, first time he had to get his passport to London to cut hair inside the Tate Modern. So we did this big kind of performance there. So you're seeing all this kind of stuff. You know, back there is my before and after pictures. These are kind of statues of my doggies. Carla and I have three mini dachshunds, black and tan. They're named Adam and Eve, and we have their puppy Apple. So they're so they're all there. So they're all in there. And the kind of, somebody had this PhD candidate had written me from Sydney, Australia, and asked like, hey Mario, like your work was really about possibilities. And I had never thought of that before. I never thought about possibilities in relationship to my work. I just thought of it as like I don't really dream because I get to do these things and all my daydreams kind of like get played out, you know? So I was like, oh, possibilities, what does that mean? And I guess my work has become about kind of possibilities in relationship to context, like where they are, and in relationship to content, what I get to put in them, in relationship to the experience of being able to like communicate and deal and delegate all these different people. Like, you know, having to work with three barbers from around the world who have totally different styles and use totally different machines is not that easy, believe me. Hairstylists and barbers are pretty particular. So being able to do all this stuff has been kind of really interesting for me. This piece here, you're looking at an installation view that was here at Alley Art Core last October. This was from an exhibition that a woman named Pilar Tompkins had organized. And it was sort of a precursor to this exhibition, but it was specifically for artists working here in Los Angeles, a few of us here. And I had been doing for the past couple of years, like I tell you, these series of kind of portraits. And one of the portraits that I've been working on, well, you know, they're kind of based on my friends' collections or ephemeral collections. And one of my really good friends, Angel Montes, who is also, you know, one of the guys' houses in the photographs here in the exhibition, is doing a 10-year federal prison sentence for moving narcotics. But before he went to prison, he had collected and amassed all this Scarface memorabilia. And I'd go into his house, and he had like big Scarface posters and all this kind of stuff. And then once I passed by his house and the ATF guys were going in there, the wife had to get rid of it, right? So I had been working on these projects where I did a performance called For All I Know He Had My Friend Angel Killed, where I read from this Oliver Stone screenplay in South Beach in Miami on Ocean Boulevard in front of the building where the chainsaw murder scene where Scarface's friend Angel was chainsaw murdered in the movie. I kind of did like this exorcism where I'm kind of reading from the screenplay, hoping to somehow way like figure out or and kind of indict the kind of Scarface character for like what he has kind of become as a kind of mythological character, which, you know, not just Latino kids, but like kids all over the world kind of have become emulators of. And it's something that, you know, I feel like a lot of times as an artist, I come to the conclusions of, or start my kind of research at this place of coming to like the site of a crash. Like You know, there are two things that I wanted to be when I was a kid: was Indiana Jones and a psychic detective. Because it was that's incredible times, right? So I wanted to like either go find the ghost in Toys R Us, or like, you know what I mean? So like coming upon these things, I try to like look at them and from the point of view of like a kind of detective and kind of peel the layers back in relationship to like what has happened. Like what happened here, you know? Like why is this happening? Why is this continuing to happen? Why are these things, you know, constantly being played out? How are these models of existence being set into place that we automatically grasp onto them as models for our own existence? And those are the kind of questions that I'm always kind of thinking about and hoping to speak to in relationship to how I work. Thank you, guys.